I call to order the House Committee on Human Services on today, Monday, May 11th. And this is an informational hearing on the residential treatment facility with the residential treatment facility providers, their needs and efficiencies. And Representative Kennemer is here. Would you like to come and talk with us about your issues?
That's giving him a lot of time.
Madam Chair, we don't have time.
Madam Chair, for the record, Bill Kennemer, State Rep, District 39, and I thank you for that gracious opportunity. On the other hand, it would be nice to have some votes, so maybe I'll... And I appreciate you doing this informational hearing. To repeat a little bit, but I think to add some other information, a lot of this came about when I visited the Perry Center before the session began. And you discover that they have 7 regulatory bodies, and the amount of time that goes into trying to meet them, and the fact that so often they're duplicative, and if not, even worse sometimes than that, because sometimes when you work with one to get into compliance, it puts you out of compliance with another. And the realization is that in trying to do the right thing, we're spending a lot of time and money that is counterproductive. And I think we need to think about that. I guess a couple of other things. I know there's been a reluctance to do an actual bill. Perhaps interim is the way to do it. I'm not sure what the best way to do it. But if we can improve efficiency, it's probably as good as sending them more money, or maybe even better. And I guess a couple of things. One is from the last hearing, I remember Chehalem House, they indicated about 1,000 hours on one series of audits. 1,000 hours, that's a half-time, year's time of a staff member. Surely there are better ways. We all share the goal of protecting everybody. I guess the other thing that I'd like to add is something I used to talk to my patients about and something that we talk about here, and that's the issue of setting goals. I used to tell my patients that we almost always achieve our goals, including nothing. And if we're not careful with this kind of an item, we have great intentions. But TRI has about a 95% failure rate. And we need to get, I think, very concrete and specific about what you want to do and how we might go about it. Because if we don't focus carefully, we don't have an outcome. And it's one of the reasons I suggested a bill is a good one, is that you have a target to shoot for, you have accountability. Most of us have good intentions, and I think you'll hear today some examples of some good intentions that have fallen short. So I guess my encouragement is to ask you to focus in, carefully figure out what it is that we might want to go for, and make sure that you have very specific goals and outcomes and some form of accountability, whether it's with a bill or some other process. And I thank you for your time, and if you have any questions, be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you for coming today. Thank you for bringing this issue before us.
Okay.
Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. Tina Kotek, for the record. Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North and Northeast Portland. It's nice to see you again this morning, and I apologize for being a few minutes late, but I couldn't agree more with the good representative here about accountability and the need for making our systems work as efficiently and effectively as possible. As you know, in the Department of Human Services budget, about 80% of the budget goes out to contractors, goes out to folks in the community, goes to local government, goes to entities that are providing the service. And whatever we can do to make that easier for them, I think, is absolutely essential. As you know, when we had the discussion about House Bill 2990, looking at the broad range of child-caring agencies here in the state and the need for additional oversight, the issue of the overlapping of requirements for those agencies who do have contracts with the state was pretty clear that maybe in the effort to do accountability, we've missed the boat in terms of the siloing of how we go about doing that. So I'm really pleased that Representative Kennemer has brought the topic forward. I'm looking forward to the conversation today. Because I do think if we're going to help our providers and the folks in the community doing the actual service, that we have to do our part to make things easier for them. So with that, I'm just happy to be here and listen to the conversation.
Any questions of either of our two witnesses here before we move on? Seeing none again, thank you both very much
thank
for
you.
Bringing this issue. And our intent today is to hear from the providers, to hear about their issues, about the redundancy of some of the reports that they're having to make and how maybe there are some ways that we can help the agencies and the Department of Human Services shorten some of that process. And then I would like the department to come in and talk with us about how it works for them and why they need some of these reports. So we'll try to get a full picture of how we can deal with this issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sounds like a good plan.
Thank you. So we're going to have a panel, Janet, and I think you have some people that you'd like to have us speak today. We've heard some of your issues in the past, and I think you might summarize those, but I think you don't need to repeat them.
You know, Madam Chair, Doug's starting to scare me.
Request visual aid.
Please,
gosh, that looks like my cost report.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to be back here today. We appreciate it a great deal. I'm Janet Ahrens, the Executive Director for the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs. And Kim Scott, the CEO for Trillium, is here with me today. Also with us today in paper that I just handed out to you are some responses to you from a couple of other folks who were on our panel when we were testifying previously on House Bill 3278. We also have with us represented in paper a couple of examples of what some of our member agencies are addressing in oversight issues. Just briefly, that we want to we think that there is a way to assure child safety through streamlining. And some of the testimony from Deb Cather Seymour that she provided Fresh View this morning really puts it better than I could. She indicates that DHS and providers all seek to find the correct balance between sufficient oversights, which ensures child safety, while avoiding redundant excesses of oversight, which diverts programs and the very resources they need to be able to maintain that safety. So I think that's probably the best theme for she stated it the best way to put forward what our intent is today. Morrison Child and Family Services, who we spoke about in the previous hearing, indicated they have about 46 different contracting entities. So they struggle with some significant oversight issues. Part of what's in your packet is a table from them, and she's broken it out into two. The executive director has broken it out into two pieces. One is what kind of reviews they've had from the state in the last 6 months, as well as adding on it the Council on Accreditation requirements for their reaccrediting. In the last 6 months, they have spent 333 staff hours. They've involved as many as 76 staff in those hours and have generated the equivalent of 81 reams of paper. Now, you'll see there's a stack of 8 reams of paper there. We need to multiply that by at least 10 more to get the idea of the amount of pieces of paper that have been reviewed and been part of the auditing and oversight processes they've been submitted to only in the last 6 months.
So these are not duplicates. When you say 800 reams, right, you said?
86.
86 reams. Mm-hmm. So it isn't that they're sending a duplicate to this agency or this agency. This is one copy of whatever the report.
No, this is the total that they were required to submit, and some of it will be repeated. In other words, the information has to be produced in another format. And so when they took a look at the amount of paper that they needed to generate in order to be able to respond to all the regulatory oversights and audit events in the last 6 months, it totaled 86, the equivalent of 86 reams of paper.
I guess I'm not making my question very clear. So when we bring when someone comes to testify and they bring copies here, they have to have 20 copies.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm asking is this 20 copies or 80 copies or 100 copies of one report? This
Chair
is
Tom.
One copy of each report.
Is Chair Tomei, you're correct. Thank you. And they also have Council on Accreditation, national accrediting, as do the other organizations who we mentioned in my testimony. And Trillium, of course, has JCO, which is another national accrediting body, which he can speak to. In addition to that, and the accreditation has a higher, an even higher standard and more rigorous scrutiny. The COA accreditation was an additional 1,271 hours with 50 staff involved and another 65 reams of paper. The Shahilam provided you with some fresh comments this morning and some testimony because Deb Cather Seymour, the executive director, couldn't be here. She mentioned in her testimony earlier that she had been through a 3-year audit with the Department of Human Services, and represented in the two boxes here and the two big binders are all the actual documents that were produced in responding to that audit, and they include that one of the notebooks alone includes the shift comparison sheets for staffing ratios. These are for kids who need one-on-one staffing support. They're documented every 15 minutes, and that top binder, that big binder, is a copy of all the documentation that they had to provide to indicate that they'd had one-on-one staffing ratios in 15-minute increments over the auditing period. They spent over $10,000 on their audit. We don't know what the cost was to DHS, but we do know that they were able to recover nearly $5,000 at the end of that review period. St. Mary's Home for Boys was here. Francis Meyer, the executive director, he also submitted some fresh comments for you this morning and part of what's being handed out. He just finished an accreditation process. It's 18 months. They are, and this is, and that's true of anyone who's being reaccredited. The rating, they are rated on 537 different standards in 13 different domains. So it's quite rigorous. And as Representative Kotek mentioned earlier, it can also be quite expensive. COA accreditation is not required by DHS, but it does allow us an opportunity to demonstrate, the mission of my organization and the mission of all of my member agencies is for the highest possible quality services, and national accreditation allows us to be able to achieve that. There are many funders who are interested in seeing that kind of national accreditation because of the credibility that comes with it. So it's important to us to have it both to achieve our mission and to be able to leverage community and private dollars to help support our programs.
I'm going to let her finish and then ask questions.
JCO is required by the Department of Human Services and is a comparable national accreditation for a slightly different population, primarily for mental health. To respect your comment, not to repeat some of the testimony that was offered earlier, we are still really interested in some meaningful direction and opportunity to be able to make as many streamlining changes as possible. One of the things we liked very much about the legislation was that it gave the state agencies a hammer of their own when they're competing. There are so many competing interests and so many challenges that they're going to be facing over the next year or two. It makes it that much easier to say this is a priority. And it's a little bit harder to do. It's a little shorter path to the back burner when there isn't strong legislative support asking for all of us to be participating in a process that will identify opportunities for streamlining. We also, and there's 100 reasons not to do this. We're just looking for the one reason to get it done. We're hoping you'll be able to give that to us today. And just one more comment on the national accreditation. There are states, including our neighbor to the north, who do provide a waiver for some of the program and clinical reviews in exchange for having national accreditation. And while that's not a guarantee of child safety, we have had a couple of members who had gone through JCO reviews, which is very stringent, and simultaneously been through reviews with the state of Oregon, and they still failed to be able to meet the contract requirements and provide the level of child safety that we think should be delivered, and I'm sure you'd agree with that. But it is a first best step that's already modeled in other states for us to be able to get closer to our ability to meet the highest possible standard and the most streamlined opportunity.
Thank you. And go ahead, Representative Huffman. And I would like to invite the Representative Kotek and Representative Kenner, if you'd like to join us up here so you can ask questions of the witnesses. If you'd like to do that, come on up.
Representative Deborah,
he'll be a little bit late.
Can you move down into the audience?
I have to leave in about, I can't stay for the entire time, so I'll watch him
out. Keith, could you bring up a chair for her? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Janet, how often do you go through the national accreditation process?
Truthfully, Representative Huffman, it's annually or semi-annually?
It's 3 years for Council on Accreditation, I believe. Joint Commission is a three-year cycle, but every year you have a self-report to the Joint Commission. You do a self-study with them. Any issues that occur in that self-study can then receive a follow-up survey.
You're welcome.
Well, I hope it's quick. I'm struggling with both sides of this issue. Mm-hmm. I understand the need for efficiencies and everything, but I think of where's the tipping point where you go too far in favor of efficiencies and doing less and hope for the best, and then you go over it because we didn't do enough, then something slips through, and then it's really bad and it costs us a huge lawsuit, for example, or a big downtick in the credibility of the agencies. And that's the part. We sit up here and listen to the stories every session and read them in the paper and things like that, the one or two bad apples that cause for everyone to have to go through this. And then we hear things that happen. It takes forever to get us back to where we were. And so I guess I'm wondering, with all the different audits, and I have how we're going to decide which ones get dropped and which ones stay, you know, that do the best job of making sure the kids are safe.
Chair Tomei, Representative Boone, thank you for your comments. I think we're all on the same page. And to be quite honest with you, the cost issue around the possibility of lawsuits is important. Frankly, that's the last thing on our minds. We're thinking more about how we can achieve outcomes and how we can keep kids safe in our care and return to safe homes. Part of what we submitted as the amendment on House Bill 3278 said that we would do the legwork to bring to the department a list of recommendations and ideas for where we could do some streamlining, and the department could evaluate those concepts and ideas and then return them to us with a comment: yes, we think this is great, let's do this; no, this isn't going to work. And that we would come back and share both those concepts and ideas to you and the rationale for whether or not we could achieve them. So that would be one short step to begin to address your interest.
Thank you.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. A couple of things. One, some of this, it doesn't necessarily ensure safety, other than that the money's being well spent and being spent according to the requirements of the agency. Is that correct?
Yes.
Then the second thing, if I may follow up about that, is that the issue is not really the one-time look, it's the multiple looks that we're facing.
Chair Tomei, Representative Van Orman, yes, you're absolutely correct. And how if both the department and the providers were able to streamline the processes, we would both have more time and more FTE available with which to assure child safety, because we're targeting our time and we're targeting where we're looking at the most effective possible places.
Thank you.
And
if I could just add something, you know, I think it's inevitable that we're going to have some very embarrassing and unfortunate circumstances. Dealing with these kinds of cases is, I mean, these are humans and very complicated ones. And I'm thinking about Riverbend, close to my district, that went under in a very embarrassing, prompt fashion, despite all of this regulation. I don't think anybody's wanting to suggest that we should do less to protect them. I think the argument is that we're not protecting them in the right ways, mm-hmm. because these multiple audits are costing time. And let me give you, I don't mean to monopolize this, but let me give you another example. When 40% of your staff time is spent in documentation, there are several problems here, and that's the number that they gave me from the Perry Center. One is that that's an enormous amount of staff time that's not being spent in contact with the people that we're trying to serve. The second is that what you do is you create a paper trail that is a bureaucratic nightmare and that inevitably is filled with landmines. And I... You know, first of all, many of these therapists are not, they're still in training or young, inexperienced, and they oftentimes, well, we have the problem here. Sometimes we don't say it well. Let's put it that way. And so a lot of times there were things in the record that on review mean something other than what was intended. But all of a sudden you get into that snag and you're in a loop, a closed loop that you can't get out of. And I just think, you know, when we have so many agencies, there needs to be a way of coordinating, and when one agency gets satisfied, it shouldn't unsatisfy another. Thank you.
Kim, I'm going to...
Sure. Thank you, Representative Tomei, and committee members. I'm Kim Scott. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for Trillium. My testimony today, which you have copies of, is really born out of a meeting that was about a year ago with my board chair and myself. My board chair is the regional director of five of the Providence hospitals in the Portland area, with Bruce Goldberg and directors and deputies of his staff to talk about this very issue. The system at the time was so complex in terms of how it's organized, who's contracting with whom in terms of is it the feds, is it the state, that group of administrators that I met with was confused to the point, as Bruce asked each one of them, do you understand this? And there was a resounding no, and came back to me and said, do you understand it? And I said, well, only from a provider perspective. At that point, we had agreed to pull together a meeting with myself and others to do a mapping process, and that meeting has yet to still happen. So this bill, in my mind, becomes very important for the very issues that you're all mentioning. Child safety, more doesn't necessarily mean that the process is any better in terms of ensuring that safety. So that's kind of the background for my testimony today. I want to give you a chance to, I think some of this will answer some of the questions that you have in terms of what it means to be a provider in this environment. The first part of the testimony talks about, you know, voluntarily providers that do intensive treatment services undergo national accreditation. That's a requirement to provide intensive treatment services, mental health services, under the federal Medicaid rules. So we are Joint Commission accredited. As I mentioned, that's every 3 years, but with self-studies built in, where they, if there are any issues of compliance, they do additional site reviews. We're overseen also by the Center for Medicaid Services around federal rule compliance, addictions and mental health in terms of certification review and ensuring that we're in compliance with the Oregon administrative rules, CAF, the child welfare arm, in terms of licensure review, health safety and program quality review. Disability Rights of Oregon, in terms of client rights monitoring, Oregon Office of Investigation and Training, which is the oversight of neglect and abuse issues. Acumentra, which is both an oversight of clinical quality and an oversight in an ongoing way, they're reviewing the issues of seclusion and restraint for CMS, I believe. I believe that's who their contract relationship is with. And then the regional MHOs also have an oversight of clinical quality and utilization review for OHP-funded clients who are part of that MHO by virtue of their residency. I have several issues and potential solutions identified. Number one, both the Joint Commission and Council on Accreditation are extensive review processes, and some, as Janet mentioned, some states have actually opted to forgo additional state-required certification processes because of that. The Center for Medicaid Services not only ensures state compliance with federal rules, but requires states to have a review methodology in place for all patient incidents involving seclusion and restraint. Currently, the state contracts with Acumentra in compliance with CMS rules to be the watchdog in reviewing all of those incidents. However, these incidents are currently concurrently reviewed by AMH, local MHOs, CAF, and if an incident involves any injury, the Office of Investigation and Training, potentially all of the above listed oversight groups could examine one incident, and this has led to frequent investigations as well as multiple and confused findings regarding a single client. The AMH certification and the CAF licensure process are very duplicative. They're looking at many of the same issues. For years, we've requested that those become an integrated and single review of programs, and we've had no resolution on that one. That seems like a pretty simple one to move forward with. Acumentra has a dual roles of reviewing utilization quality of service and also acting as the investigation and disciplinary body regarding noncompliance with seclusion and restraint rules, federal rules where CMS is the final authority. These dual roles have created difficulty for providers when utilization reviewers and CMS reviewers all work out of the same office, have the same supervisor, and share information and solutions before a review is even complete. OIT has the broad role of reviewing cases of abuse and neglect. Given the abuse and neglect definition changes that only pertain to child treatment agencies, their reviews often duplicate the activities of Acumentra regarding seclusion and restraint rules. In addition, OIT's role has apparently expanded from determining if abuse report is substantiated to providing direction on amending policies and procedures, as well as providing clinical consultation. This adds to the confusion. One potential solution would be to eliminate Acumentra's dual role of quality control and seclusion and restraint oversight by focus only on the quality issues. OIT could then focus primarily on abuse, neglect, and seclusion and restraint issues. When there is an incident of seclusion or manual restraint resulting in any injury or mark, we are required to provide documentation to AMH, MHOs, DRO, Acumentra, and OIT. This adds to the cost of care. One solution is to have one lead oversight group that can share information as needed with other agencies. There's tremendous overlap between an AMH review and JCO review. Both require 2 to 4 days to complete. AMH occurs approximately every year, and JCO can occur every year or can stretch to once every 3 years. A more effective process would be to change the review cycles so that AMH would forego their review during years when Joint Commission is doing site reviews.
Thank you, Ken. Any questions? Thank you so much for coming.
Well, Madam Chair, I do have a question, Ken. On the first page of your presentation,
yes.
Item number 3, where you described the AMH certification CAF license is duplicative. Could you kind of go into a little more detail with me on that?
Yeah. AMH is specifically looking at our compliance with the Oregon administrative rules as it pertains to being a mental health provider. And where the differences are, when CAF comes out, they're more focused on life and safety issues, certain types of requirements. Are we compliant with county codes, health codes? Do we have enough square footage? All of those kinds of things. But there's also a broader look they do that's really around program quality, which is very consistent with what AMH is looking at as they're looking at the OAR certification. What we've thought all along is that if one review could happen concurrently, that would give our staff a chance to do the one review. They could still look at the licensure differences, but they could really come together on the program review piece.
Just follow up, Madam Chair. Thank you. So, Ken, how long has this been going on?
Since, from my perspective, Gary Weeks won. Sorry. This goes all the way back to, I think, when Gary was in his role first time as head of DHS. We've had these conversations.
It was. 8 years.
I'm 8 years, roughly.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative
Norman. I just have a comment. This is bringing back memories of Head Start performance reviews every 3 years and the relationship between the state of Oregon and the federal Head Start program and how they have managed to work together so that when there are reviews of Head Start programs, it's the state and the feds together. And one of the interesting things about the Head Start performance reviews is that it's gone through a number of changes over the years, but it's taken a significant amount of time and energy to produce those changes. And when I first started, it was called a SAVI, Self-Assessment Revalidation Instrument, and then it went through, and so now it's on its third iteration. And so it's a very time-consuming thing, but for the Head Start programs, the review takes a week, every 3 years, and it's an extremely stressful process. And in Head Start, there's a rule that if it's not on paper, it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I certainly understand what they're talking about, and in seeing the number of agencies, the coordination and collaboration of those agencies has got to be monumental. But I have to say that I certainly have my sympathies with the programs.
Thank you. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I think we have some folks. Why don't you just leave that there? That's a great visual for us, Doug. Doug, I should leave it there. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Okay, so let's bring Jeanette Williams, Donna Ketty, and Mike Morris up. These are from DHS. Thank you very much.
Chair Tomei, good morning. Chair Tomei, members of the committee, for the record, I am Donna Ketty, Manager of Residential Treatment and Licensing with Department of Human Services, Children, Adults, and Families. And I have representatives with me. Maybe you guys would like to introduce yourselves.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I'm Mike Morris. I'm the manager for the Quality Improvement and Certification Unit with Addictions and Mental Health.
And Chair Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Jeanette Williams, and I manage Children's Services for Seniors and People with Disabilities, the Office of Developmental Disability Services, and the Children's Residential Programs fit within that purview.
Great.
We also thank you for this opportunity to come and talk to you a little bit about basically kind of an overview of what we do, some of the reasons for why we do it, and really to let you know that we do know that there are efficiencies that can happen, and possibly give you a couple of examples of areas where we have tried to make some move toward those efficiencies. We value the relationship we have with our providers, and we think that it has been a good one, and so we'd like to at least speak to being able to continue to work with them on some ongoing efficiencies, as well as being open to future efficiencies. We think that we have begun some of that, but to begin, you're getting three handouts. One of them is a document that has kind of a brief overview of some of the areas within DHS that have regulatory oversight of many of the providers. As I said, I represent Children, Adults, and Families, and have come before you before letting you know that we have a great many programs that we oversee, approximately 237 agencies across the state of Oregon do have a private child caring agency license. And that is the initial step that many agencies must take to be in business, in the business of serving children. There is no obligation to carry on any further business that comes with that license, but it is required to operate. So it's kind of the foundational piece, the beginning step for being an agency that serves kids in Oregon. The way I guess I would describe what happens then is probably best laid out in the visual that you have, which would be the second document. But there, you know, after getting the private child caring agency license, providers have an opportunity to engage in whatever form of business with kids that they would like to pursue. So beyond the private child caring agency license, their choice to be served by AMH or any other entity is dependent on their business model that they choose. And so as we go down the DHS, the parts of DHS that oversee the regulatory functions, the Addictions and Mental Health Division does certify those programs that have psychiatric residential treatment facilities and psychiatric day treatment programs. And again, on the flowchart, you'll see that number is, I don't have it right in front of me, but it is relatively small compared to the overall number of private child caring agencies that are licensed across the state. That certificate of approval that they issue allows entities, psychiatric residential facilities, to contract with mental health for intensive treatment services, and which in fact then is a requirement for Medicaid billing. You'll find that as a recurring theme. Many of the points of oversight are tied to federal regulations, tied to opportunities to bill Medicaid. Seniors and people with disabilities has an oversight role. They are the Mr. Scott mentioned Acumentra. Acumentra was the body that was contracted with for compliance with conditions of participation, but they have not performed that function, I think, since about July of last year. Seniors and people with disabilities assume that responsibility, and I believe that recently AMH has indicated that they'll be taking it over. So. And they are their responsibility is for, again, the federal conditions of participation. They look at just incidents of seclusion and restraint within the psychiatric residential facilities. Then the Office of Developmental Disabilities within seniors and people with disabilities, they do their own licensing. They, where CAF is kind of the foundational piece for most kids programs, the Developmental Disabilities Division does their a unique, separate licensing for their programs. There are a few, just a handful, I think it's three, programs that fall within the same group of residential programs that CAF licenses, and in those cases, Developmental Disabilities Services defers to the CAF license, so there is no duplication there. And then the Office of Investigations and Training is the protective services oversight group for all of us. And they look at allegations of abuse and neglect. And so they have that beginning function. Anytime there is a report of suspected abuse, the Office of Investigations and Training will go in initially before any of us typically and do protective services. They're not represented here today, but they were, you know, if there's any information that is needed, we could surely get it from them. So that's kind of a brief overview of the regulatory bodies within DHS. Moving to the chart, the flow chart, you know, we've tried to depict visually that, you know, the multitude of programs that are licensed initially, again, that is the mandatory license by statute. The rest are contracts and certificates that allow business, the private child caring agencies to do business, and most of them fall within either the foster care agencies or the residential treatment realm. As you can see, there are many areas that have no other oversight from any entity within DHS that also require CAF licensing. But there is a constellation of programs, and the psychiatric residential programs that Mr. Scott represents are part of that. And they do have, but again, depending on what their choice and business model is, they could have potentially many different contracts and relationships that are driven by Medicaid or other groups. The third handout is an example of a transformation. It's not an initiative, but it's an event that, again, Mr. Scott referenced the request about a year ago for the department to take a look at some efficiencies. And Dr. Goldberg did request that the four entities within the department, CAF, licensing, AMH, SPD, and OIT, begin an efficiency event. And so we did that about a year ago. And we've made quite a bit of progress in doing process mapping. And one thing that we discovered through that process mapping is that we do each have very detailed but somewhat different processes. We look for areas to be more efficient and to cut out duplication. And at the end of at least the mapping piece, we realized that we could through communication avoid, for example, all showing up at a program at the same time or things like that. So we did begin a communication group around that. That process is not complete. The next step is to engage the providers, bring them in, and see where they think we can become more efficient now that we have it all mapped out. But we are vested in continuing to work on that. And so that is one area that we're interested in continuing to look at. As you look at the chart, the visual, you can see reference to BRS contracts. That's a CAF contract. That, again, Medicaid drives that. Providers choose to bid on those contracts, and when they win them, we have to go in. But for the most part, beyond the licensing, the additional regulatory bodies are layers of additional safety that up the standards, really, from one contract to the other or one certification to the other. CAF provides for the minimum safety standard, and then, you know, where we can defer to each other, we've tried to do that, but generally it builds upon the standard from there. So, and with that, I don't know if my colleagues have additional comments. Or okay.
I have a question. So on this material that you gave, the psychiatric residential treatment facility, down at the bottom you have the action and the target date. So the target date was to review with the providers to solicit input. It was May 31st. Did that happen?
Chair Tomei, we have made contacts with the Alliance and are making contacts with the providers to schedule that review with them.
You contacted them, but that hasn't done. And then an action plan will be done by July 31st of this year, correct?
That's correct.
Great. Okay. Yes, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering what involvement you've had with OYA on this, because particularly around the BRS beds, if there's one spot where I think there's almost complete overlap in terms of what they're looking at, it would be that. And so OYA on this conversation?
Chair Tomei, Representative Kotek, I am also the manager of the BRS program for CAF. And we have a pretty close relationship with OIA, working relationship.
And we do have those letters, I think, first time today. That
I'm sorry.
The Oregon Youth Authority. Thank you.
And the Behavioral Rehabilitation Services program, which, thank you. which is the ability to provide those services is driven by the state plan and Medicaid compliance. Whenever we want to make a contract change, we meet with OIA and make sure that they also would like to make that change. We try to work very closely with them. I meet on a regular basis with them. Our analysts are actually in communication with each other. If OIA's analysts go to a program and they see some things that they're concerned about, they may call us and let us know, and we may need to do follow-up from our perspective. So we make those kinds of efforts. Not to say that there isn't, you know, room for us to continue to find more efficiencies there, but I think we're positioned to do that.
Follow-up? And I think the communication is absolutely warranted. I guess I was trying to get at, obviously OIA might be looking at different things, but these are essentially, whereas you have issues around different populations, same population of kids, it's just depending on who's paying for it, and maybe that's an oversimplification, but or if you've got a child in one facility that where you have CAF, Children, Adult, and Families placed youth versus an Oregon Youth Authority placed youth, I guess I'm trying to figure out how we can coordinate or even have one review process. I know that's difficult because it's two agencies, but so communication is good, but I'm at the actual type of review that we hear from the agencies. Do we need an additional review? Can we have one review? I just don't know the answer to that question.
Chair Tomei, Representative Kotek, I'm not sure that I know the answer to that question either. I think, you know, they have a statute, as do we, and so I think we've made, as I've said, good efforts to try to bring it together, but being a separate agency, we've not had the goal of combining our reviews in the past. Not to say we couldn't take a look at, you know, whether that was feasible or not.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Kotek is in the Ways and Means Committee for Ways and for Human Services. We keep looking for efficiencies, and especially in the Department of Human Services. And just as I'm hearing this, and we talk a lot about silos, I mean, all of this is within the Department of Human Services. So it seems to me that we have all of these agencies within the Department of Human Services. Wouldn't it make some sense for us to direct the Department of Human Services to have same forms? Maybe there might be another page that you might specifically deal with your one department or agency within the Department of Human Services. But wouldn't it make sense if everybody's working with children that everybody answers this question, and then there might be something specific to that one agency? Does that make any kind of sense?
I think it would depend on the review of the rules that are administering these, because my understanding is you have different parts of the Department of Human Services having to perform audits. And these audits they go, I think, beyond the safety issue. They go to, you know, making sure that the program quality, good use of the dollar. I mean, it's more than just a safety oversight. But my understanding from how it works is that the different contract oversights are delegated to each division, versus one office within the entire department that does all the audits. And I'm not sure how historically that's come about, but am I right that it's divvied up by division in terms of who does the audits versus, you know, while I think we could share forms, I almost think you need maybe one spot that someone's doing all the auditing for the entire department, but that's a lot of contracts. So I don't know, maybe the pros and cons of either approach from the department's perspective.
Chair Tomei, Representative Kotek, I'll give mine and then let Mike and Jeanette weigh in. But, you know, what we fully expected when we did, for example, the process mapping of our three areas to find more areas of duplication than we found. It was surprising to us the number of different things that we each look at. And so I think there's room to find those common points a lot better than we have. But we have different regulations, and they drive a lot of what we do.
Chair Tomei, Representative Kotek, it's always a balance as far as when you centralize contracting and then divide it out among the divisions in the different offices, as far as, you know, the particular type of oversight. For us, for example, with addictions and mental health, we are reviewing the psychiatric treatment. So those are very specific services that we're looking at, and with specific requirements around clinical requirements, with the expertise that relies, that rests in our division. So it's always looking for how can we, you know, streamline and rely on each other's reviews or oversight. Mm-hmm. So it's a challenge to try to find that without losing the accountability of those different programs.
Representative Chair Tomei, Representative Kotek, we recently participated with AMH and CAF in a review with a program that was having a lot of challenges, and we did have challenges finding ways to not overlap during that review, but we specifically did go out together to make it a more comprehensive process for, and a more, I think, effective one for the provider and for all of us. And there are some, to respond to you specifically, Representative Kotek, there are some framework questions that are the same across the agencies. But yes, we each have different funding streams. Even different parts of CMS fund us. And so the contracts do go to the requirements that are based on that funding stream often, and to the specific requirements of our statute. So I do think there's some places where we could have some common questions across the department, but that will not remove the need to have some specific areas that go where the standards actually reflect the purpose of the service, which I think is the key here, because even as you look at the flow chart that Donna Keddie was describing, every one of these contracts has a different purpose for a different population. And so, and those different populations have some common needs and some common requirements around health and safety, but they also have some specific needs that are specific to the population. A case in point would be, for instance, in the Oregon Youth Authority, you would not ever have a hands-on approach. And in SPD, seclusion is disallowed for any population who has a developmental disability. But it may be a practice that's appropriate for another population. So there are some things that will be specific to the treatment needs of the individuals being served, and the regulations flow from that.
Okay, thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Several years ago, I hear what you're saying, because several years ago, the state police restructured their reporting process, too, because we used to have crime report, personal report, custody report, vehicle report. And each one of those reports wanted different issues, because the feds wanted this, mm-hmm. state wanted this, and counties wanted it. But what we ended up doing was actually put everything into one main report. And it really tried to make it consistent, it sounds like you're kind of heading that direction.
Mm-hmm. Chair Tomei, Representative Olson, I think we are. There, you know, as I said, there are several areas where we've tried to be more efficient, and, you know, again, working with the providers in the future, if they help us identify areas that would be most helpful to them, we certainly will try to work with them on that.
Thank you.
Representative Kellen, do you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to frame my question, really, I am. The whole conversation today is thought-provoking. At the same time, brings up quite a bit of anxiety for me. In this body, every time there's a problem, we look for another statutory fix so that it doesn't ever happen again. That's where we err on the side of regulation. I think that it is absolutely true. If it's not on paper, it doesn't exist, at least from a judicial standpoint, and it's the kind of documentation process that I taught when I was working on emergency responders kinds of things. You got to put it down what you actually did. And I think we also need to take into consideration that anytime we study an issue, it costs staff time to do that study. So I think one question I would have is from the perspective of the individuals on this panel, how we're judiciously applying the opportunity to study where we could make efficiencies, but at the same time recognize a shortfall in staffing, if that's been a problem. And then I'd have a follow-up.
Chair Tomei, Representative Callan, I appreciate that comment. I've been before you before with House Bill 2990, speaking to the 230 some odd programs and the two staff that oversee them. So we do have to prioritize very carefully where we put our attention, and the highest issues of highest concern around health and safety do tend to get our attention, as I think they should. But we do appreciate that if we can do our work more efficiently, we may have more time. I'm not sure that we'll have enough time with the same two staff, but I do appreciate that, that with prioritization. And I think we've made some efforts to try and pull together to do that. So I think it's been brought to our attention with a brighter light on it, and we'll continue to try to work harder on it, make it rise up in the list. So.
Follow up. Certainly anytime we get a flow chart of any kind and you start trying to follow boxes and circles and triangles and diamonds and you go, oh man, no wonder there's a problem. And I can really empathize with an agency when you think about the amount of time an audit takes and how much staff time away from other duties it takes if you've got audit after audit or regulatory process. I do think that a couple of the comments that you made, excuse me, about different contracts upping the minimum standards, that's also sort of a choice. You know, you're either going to provide this program, or if you want to add on this program, then you've got an additional set of standards you have to meet. And it follows the silo kind of funding that, unfortunately, we struggle with from the federal government and from the state to the local government. So any way that we can make that more efficient and add simply a page for an additional level or something instead of starting all over from the beginning, I think we're equally guilty of that in the educational process when we start all over from the beginning with requiring another form for everything. I will be anxious to review some of what you found in your mapping process and where we see how we could do some more of that, certainly with a goal of finding efficiencies. I think we also need to look at audits, do a variety of things. It's safety, it's whether you're meeting program guidelines, or it's enabling us to respond to the taxpayer demand of value for the dollar that we put into these programs and the constant demand on proving outcomes for everything we do. Maybe we need to get a grip on reality as to what we can actually prove and what we can't necessarily prove, but we just know in our hearts are the right things to do. But I think having wandered through all of that, my most pressing question is around some of the issues that were brought up about national accreditation and then how those align with state standards. Are there places where if facilities have national accreditation for something, then our state standards should sort of automatically assume that they've met a certain level of standard?
Do you want to address that?
first of all, I Chair Tomei, Representative Cowan, just I think it's important to understand a little bit of my background. Before coming to work at the state 10 years ago, I spent 22 years working in hospitals. And one of the things I remember most when I left working in a hospital was not having to go through another Medicare or a JCO review. And so some people would say I've come to the dark side. Now I'm the manager of those kind of reviews. But I'm constantly having been subject to those kind of reviews. I'm always with our team looking for efficiencies and why is this that person going out and this person going out later and trying to combine those. So, you know, looking for those efficiencies is always, you know, something in my mind as we manage our work. In regards to national accreditation, there's a couple of issues. One is we've had within our division a couple of experiences in recent years of programs that have gone through national accreditation, and then problems have been brought to our attention. We've gone out and conducted pretty exhaustive reviews and over a period of time, and subsequently had to take action on those programs, and those programs have subsequently closed. So there's times that the national accreditation doesn't necessarily assure all the standards that we would like to see. Also, the other issue is the accreditation is national, and they come periodically. And it's the besides the regular reviews that we do, we spend a lot of time also on following up on complaints. And so having the state local, from a national perspective, the local oversight of the state provides us with, you know, the accountability of going out and actually looking at programs in between those reviews and taking action when necessary, or working with programs to correct problems. So those are just a couple of the issues that have been kind of tossed about as we've looked at that issue.
Representative Kotek, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, two questions. One, I guess we keep talking about Centers for Medicaid and Medicare, and I'm assuming, is there any way for us to pursue a waiver to minimize some of that reporting? I mean, I'm assuming that when we're talking Medicaid dollars, there's extra stuff involved versus, say, something at the state level. I just didn't know if there are any options there for us, if that helps at all, or it's not really a large factor.
Chair Tomei, Representative Kotek, I'm trying to think of the various funding sources through CMS, Medicaid, and there is some of the regulations are not necessarily tied with funding like as in Medicaid, but some of the CMS regulations have to do with the oversight of psychiatric residential treatment facilities and the requirements that the federal government has in regards to oversight of those and following up on specific. So those things we would not be able to seek waivers for, and I don't know enough regarding all the other Medicaid payments if there's ways to streamline that through waivers.
Thank you. Wait, follow up? Well, and the reason I was thinking about that was, if I'm looking at the Morrison Child and Family Service sheet, which is, I think, one of the questions I would have back for the advocates is how often we do some of these audits and reviews. Granted, this is a six-month snapshot. For example, I think Federal Lunch Program, I'm not sure, they might do it once every several years. I could be wrong on that, but I don't know how often they do it. But there's a significant amount of paperwork. But that's the Department of Ed. That's a completely different program. I think it's also important for us to realize when we have two reviews from Verity, one from Clackamas County, one from Washington County, one from Family Care, that's based on how we have decided as a state to structure how we do managed care for our Medicaid patients. Because I'm assuming Family Care is doing an audit at Morrison because they're doing mental health services through the Oregon Health Plan. You have county reviews. Verity is a Multnomah County review, and you have Clackamas in Washington because we have decided to treat each of our counties as the mental health authority, and so they have obligations. So that's why you have multiple reviews there. And so the question becomes, and one of the conversations we're having in the subcommittee and elsewhere is,
while I don't think we have the perfect answer, do we want to look at how we do mental health services because of this very fact? You have multiple jurisdictions involved with the same set of providers. I think we all forget that there's only one universe of providers out there. Essentially, you have your mental health providers and your A&D providers, and they are responding to the different funding streams and the way we've determined services should be delivered at the county level from our determination. So this is very interesting to see because I think it points to maybe we have to do some of our Medicaid payment structures a little different so you wouldn't have such multiple agencies showing up at your door. But that's a whole different conversation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Van Orman, did you have a question?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I am really trying hard to visualize what's going on here, and part of me says, well, number one, we really want to know the health of the nonprofit, and this is about nonprofits. Is that correct? All of this conversation is about the contracts with nonprofits.
Chair Tomei, Representative Van Orman, for the most part, they are
for the
nonprofits.
Most parts. Right. Okay. So number one is that we have an audit of the performance of the administration of the program, that the money is being spent appropriately. Is that correct? Okay, thank you. So then the big part is of all of these different looks are based on services under a certain model provided by the funding. Is that correct? I think I'm getting it. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Any other questions? Representative Huffman.
Probably just a comment, Madam Chair. I would hope that all of these reports are utilized. And the reason I say that is because I have an acquaintance in an agency within the state that compiles data from such a report and then files it in a cabinet. And on a stack of Bibles, I'm sworn to that report is never looked at by anybody. But yet, year after year, this individual compiles the data, puts it in the file cabinet, and it costs untold man-hours to compile that throughout the state on an annual basis. So I would just hope that... Because as a private business person, when I had the radio station, every 24 months I went back and reviewed what I was asking my employees for and then trimmed it down because I found out that there were three additional reports that I had generated over that 24-month period that were duplicative or unnecessary or whatever the need was.
Well made.
Donna may have a comment on my comment.
Chair Tomei, Representative. Huffman, most of our reports come in the form of corrective action plans, and so speaking for CAF licensing, it being the minimum safety standard, we still have an average of probably 4 corrective actions each time we do a site visit, regardless of how many other entities have reviewed from their own perspective. The minimum safety standards plans have an average of 4 corrective actions, and so we always have an active relationship with the providers working toward correcting. And I believe that's true for all of the entities that do file these reports as a result of our visits and our interactions with the agencies.
Thank you. Any further questions at this panel? Representative Van Orman.
Thank you. Well, that raises a question then about turnover, about staff turnover in programs, because a lot of times that's when these errors develop. Is that a fair assessment on staff turnover at these agencies?
Chair Tomei, Representative Van Orman, I think that is a fair assessment, and I think the providers would probably back that up, that the retention of employees is difficult in this line of work and, current circumstances.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to speak on these issues? Janet has one last comment, it looks like. Oh, and Kim, too. All right. Come on up. Thank you, Ben, Representative Kotek. Thank you for coming.
No, thank you, Madam.
Colleagues, one of the reasons we are having this hearing today is because we had two bills before us, and one of them has been referenced today, 2990, and also 3278. And we maybe should have reminded you to bring those, but that's right. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Tomei and committee members. Janet Ahrens with the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs. Just a couple of quick follow-up comments. Speaking to a question that Representative Kotak had earlier about the various MHOs and Morrison having contracts with Washington County and Clackamas County, child welfare now requires that any of the children that are served in under a BRS contract that the mental health provider needs to be the county of origin. So all of those contracts are now responsible for engaging in other contract relationships with all of the MHOs across the state, which is significantly different from the way it was structured when the system was originally organized. And then secondly, Donna mentioned, three different times about how the providers choose to bid on contracts and based on their business models are deciding which divisions in the department or whether or not they want to engage with multiple agencies in the state. It's been our distinct impression that the state made a decision that private providers would be the most appropriate entity to deliver these services. And they've made a number of policy decisions over the years to ensure that there are the least number of doors from which families might access those services, that there be systems of care. We have the Children's System Change Initiative. We now have the Governor's Initiative for Wraparound Oregon. And we believe that that is a correct policy decision and the right way to go. And I don't believe that the legislature or the governor has or the state have made those decisions based on our business models.
Yeah. Chair Tomei and committee members, I found myself thinking about where we are in terms of kind of unprecedented times economically and also just how this impacts the lives of Oregon's most vulnerable people. And so the standards are extremely important in terms of how we oversee these types of programs. I also think back to several of the governor appointed work groups that took a look at these children's services and the different types, you know, how we're integrated or not integrated, how they're working, how they're not working. I think every report has always come back. Several of you have mentioned today about the discussion of silos and a lack of an alignment and integration in terms of oversight of services. I think they mentioned there were 238 providers in contract. If I think nationally about the Joint Commission, that is a group that literally surveys thousands and thousands of organizations a year, and very organizations with very different business models, everything from hospitals to outpatient programs, and they've developed processes where they do tailored surveys. So they make sure they have the people on hand with the different disciplines to review and evaluate the different areas. When I think about that and think about the state's ability, my hope would be that at some point that they would look at tailored, integrated types of reviews. As it stands right now for each one of these reviews, they're sending out three or four people on a team to review an organization the size of Trillium for days at a time. My hope would be that there's some type of a consolidated approach, a tailored survey, if you will, that looked at the key issues for each one of these regulatory bodies, but more of a consolidated approach. The other thing was that Mr. Morse mentioned the national accreditation, the standards and the differences. What I would like you to know is he is correct. There have been quality of concern where the state has had to go out and to look at programs where there have been issues to follow up on those reviews, but they're also following up on the very process that we're talking about here. It's not just that the national accreditation came out every 3 years. In fact, each one of these regulatory entities has been out there annually. So they're also following up on that. So I just want to point that out. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
And we really do appreciate the attention of the committee and its members and Chair Tomei in responding to this, and we appreciate the responsiveness of the department as well, and we're looking forward to a solution.
I think this is an issue that quite a few of us are very interested in, and my intent is that in the supplemental session that I think will be happening in February, we'd like to revisit this. This will be after the agencies have met with the providers, and perhaps we can see some progress made on being able to streamline the process. Any last comments? Yes, Representative Kenemer.
I just wanted to thank you for the hearing and also the providers as well as agency folks for coming today. I think it's time to have a discussion, and it reminds me of when I went to Clackamas County 12 years ago. I thought I'd go visit all of our employees. I didn't have a clue how many 2,300 were, much less 55,000. And but one of the things that came out of that is we did an audit because I couldn't find where they all worked. And we found we had 128 functions in 78 locations. And what had happened over time is as we got a new grant, we just added a new department or a new group. And we just had all of these siloed facilities and activities, all of which were good, and we had lost the synergy of bringing them together. And that resulted in a consolidation that was highly, much more efficient and streamlined. And I just think that there's some of that here. You know, we've been, you know, some of the quotes, we've made some efforts, we're trying to, and I think that's right. And I think there, but I think your idea of coming back in February with a more tailored program will get better results, and I appreciate that.
Thank you. Any last comments? Thank you very much, committee. And I will see you Wednesday. The meetings from now on will be at 8:30 in the morning, and we will be dealing with some measures that the Senate has sent us over. And
Friday.
Thank you.
Friday? Not Wednesday, Friday. I mean, we have a meeting Wednesday, but Friday is when we'll have the Senate bills.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry.
Okay. Thank you. Any last comments? Close the House Committee on Human Services.